Welcome to today's episode of the Auburn Daily Podcast. I want to thank you guys for checking it out on another day. Got a big game against LSU this upcoming weekend. And also, we are right in the middle of the season. And it has definitely been quite a season so far. So on today's episode, I brought on our guy once again, Pat Barnes. And we're going to talk about the retrospectively. We're going to give Auburn kind of a mid-season grade. Just have a little conversation about how everything has been going thus far, kind of what we think big picture, small picture, short and long term, and just roll from there. And then just see how that kind of how things have gone so far, how that's going to roll into LSU, and then what that is going to look like rolling on into 2024. So, Pat, welcome once again to the show. And we're going to start this off just kind of how we said, midway through the season. Tell me how you think Auburn has done thus far.
Well, first off, thanks for having me on again, Memes. I enjoyed our first episode and glad I can be back on talking small town football. It's my favorite thing to do in the world. So I guess first off, season's been a little bit up and down so far. What do you think?
Well, okay, yeah. So, I mean, down, if we're talking down, we're talking passing yards because we're at some historically bad passing yard numbers, which. You know, I'll be feeling about that going into, I hadn't been shy about how I felt about the passing situation, just kind of all things considered of what Hugh Freeze offenses should be, the hype with Montgomery, then of course bringing in a guy like Thorne, who you thought was going to have a very, very high floor with passing, a bad passing year by Thorne standards previously would have been pretty dang good with Auburn, and we're knocking on the doors of like Cody Burns, Gimp Shoulder, Chris Todd, Clint Mosley type numbers. So it's a little scary as of right now. I'm sure you'll dive into why we shouldn't be afraid, and I'll probably dive into why we should be afraid. So let's just start with that right now, the passing. What's been going on with that? Why make me feel optimistic about it. You're not.
Well, I'll try. I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat it, obviously. I mean, we can all watch what's been happening on Saturday so far, and we've had two, I would say, pretty good performances in the passing game and then three really bad performances in the passing game. So as far as what we've seen so far, there's not much I can say to make you feel better about that. I do think we are looking towards a schedule. We're not going to be playing a bunch of defenses outside of Alabama that are going to be presenting the type of matchup that A&M and Georgia did. So I'm looking forward to seeing some improvement there. And if we don't see the improvement there, then I'll be right there with you wondering, hey, what the heck really happened this year? You know, I don't think anybody was expecting us to be top of the SEC in passing, but we definitely expected improvement.
So at what point do we, I guess, as the fans and or expect the coaches to draw the line of saying, okay, enough is enough. And then when enough is enough, like, what happens from there? Because, I mean, the idea we're trying to get here is kind of a midseason grade. And I know at no point nobody wants to be in this situation midseason. I think if you told anybody, hey, post bye week rolling into game six, this is where Auburn's going to be at, there'd be some hair being yanked out. For those who have hair, would be yanking their hair out.
I don't disagree with you, but keep in mind – we are five games into a season where it's a brand new scheme. You've got two new offensive coaches working together for the first time. And I think a lot of people forget it's really three offensive coaches. The third one has worked with Freeze for years, Ken Austin. But if stories be believed, he's got a ton of influence on what's going on in the game plans too. And he and Freeze have had a lot of successful offenses at Liberty. But when you bring in Philip Montgomery in, and he runs a lot of different, or historically, and he ran a lot of different schemes. He ran more of a gap scheme run game. I think Freeze and Austin have done more of a zone scheme run game traditionally. So they're kind of meshing that. So you got two things meshing there. You've got over half the offense are brand new players to Auburn, either transferred. I think those are all transfers. I don't think we have any true freshmen starting on offense off the top of my head. You've got a brand new quarterback who got here in, when did he get in here?
Late May. I think he committed. I think he was actually, funny enough, he committed on my birthday, which was May 5th. That's when the announcement was, if memory serves right.
So he committed early May. He probably got here late May then.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at that. It's just, there's tons of new stuff working together for the first time, and it's five games in. Go ahead.
So let's get this here. As far as looking at the season as a whole, and comparatively speaking, is this something where it's like, okay, look at what Venables has done, turning Oklahoma around for how bad that looked. Look at Mike Norvell. I mean, maybe you could make the argument. I think Cristobal is still kind of in a to-be-determined type situation. And like, hey, where it seems like the world is falling, where it seems like the seat may get very hot. And obviously, I think Napier is just walking in every direction. Yeah, I mean, Napier's walking like to the edge of the plank, walking backwards, walking forward. So, yeah, it's still on the plank. But looking at just, we'll say, Venables and Norvell, like, is that kind of what to be the expectation of, like, all right, well, we kind of stall it in year one, maybe even have a slight step back, but to absolutely leap forward? Are those just comparables? Just like, there's so many differences between the Florida State and or Oklahoma situation compared to Auburn. It's just, is that reasonably comparable to think that that could give anybody some sense of optimism? Or is that just grasping at straws? Is that just some fan fiction to make yourself sleep better at night?
No, I think that's exactly what is happening right now. I think Norvell at Florida State is an excellent comparison to what you're looking at, what Freeze is trying to build at Auburn right
now. Why is that? Expand on that. Why would that be a good example?
Norvell got to Florida State when you had Jimbo Fisher, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I think it was Willie Taggart right after that. And I can't remember if Norvell came in right after Taggart, if there was a guy in between there. I think it was right after 2 years of Taggart, then Norvell came in there. But recruiting, especially on the offensive line at Florida State, very similar to Gus under Jimbo, fell off a cliff at the end of Jimbo's tenure. And yeah, Taggart did – go ahead.
It was Jimbo Fisher, Haggins, Taggart, and then Mike Norvell.
I think Odell Haggins was the interim coach. He's their defensive line coach now, but he's kind of like a Florida high school, South Georgia coaching high school legend, from what I understand.
Yeah. He kind of held the interim position, correct?
Yeah, he's their ace in the hole when it comes to recruiting.
But yeah, Taggart obviously is a win percentage was 442.9, so that's not going to do it.
No,
Norvell. He was awful. Yeah, I mean, Norvell obviously started rough his first 2 years, and then it's obviously creeping upward now. But yeah, sorry, I interrupted on that. Continue on the comparison.
Well, the biggest reason Norvell started rough his first 2 years is because for Florida State, the cupboard was left bare after the last couple of Jimbo tenures and those Taggart tenures. I think they had a ton of roster turnover, and they just weren't recruiting at the level you're used to seeing Florida State recruit to. And they didn't have a quarterback. It's the biggest issue. So it took them a long time to get rolling, and, you know, building a competitive roster takes time, and it may even take Auburn a little bit longer than it took Norvell, because I think it's fair to say that the competition Freeze is going to be going up against is a little bit rougher than what Norvell had in the ACC.
And recruiting competition, too. So,
correct.
So let's take this angle of it as well. And I kind of said and you kind of answered it too with the spinning off the question of, all right, when do we draw the line of thorn of, all right, hey, this is not working, and kind of went into that saying, hey, if we're at this point, still hadn't changed, we need some answers. We need something tangible to happen, because it can't stay where it's at. I guess at a coaching point, and you have been very outspoken. How did you describe yourself as pro Freeze on the last episode? I think it was a little catchphrase you had for it.
I'm definitely pro Freeze. I guess if the anti-freezers would be the opposite. I don't know if there's a better phrase than pro Freeze, but we'll stick with pro Freeze now.
The opposite of the anti-freezers. Okay, yeah,
correct. That's
very fair. So, needless to say, your allegiances and your bias is out there.
True.
So at this point, and that's it's very important to foundation for the next question of this. At what point do you start waving the flag of like, okay, I'm a little nervous about what's happening right here with Freeze. It's short and or long term. Just whatever you think would say, if we get to these milestones, I don't know. What would get you there?
I'm making zero sweeping judgments until 2025 at the earliest.
Oh,
if we're okay. Sitting here 2 years from now and it's looking like it is right now and our passing game sucks, I'll be pretty pissed at that point.
But so this is a year zero situation for you. Like this year, pretty much minus the recruiting aspect leading into as your 2025 year, nothing this year reasonably matters too much.
On the field, no. Honestly, it does not. I think primary focus this year has to be on building the roster to be competitive in the coming years. Now, I think recruiting needs to be lights out. And I'm not going to put a number grade I want to see on that class. I just want to be able to look at the signing class and say, these are all players that our competitors wanted. And I know they're going to be useful players.
So you don't think there's anything that could happen? Like I'm saying just some of the Auburn Armageddon worst case scenario that could happen on the field, off the field, minus like some actual controversy, NCAA invest. I'm talking about like that. I mean, just guys flipping, decommitting, abundance of transfers, that type stuff. You're not worried in the slightest that there could be some things that would say, all right, where there's smoke, there might be fire.
No, there's nothing on the field this year that can happen that's gonna turn me off from being excited about the future as long as we continue to accumulate talent.
Okay. Now, what about from a coaching standpoint here? So let's just to kind of keep with the theme of midseason grades. How would you, because this is kind of a segue of that, how would you grade the coaches so far? Because obviously that is something to where we could be seeing next season, the years after is obviously going to be, you know, attrition. Who are some guys, assistant wises, that position coaches, et cetera, who you're like, yeah, like it, don't like it?
On offense, I really like what I've seen from recruiting, and you can definitely say his position group has improved throughout the year from Jake Thornton as far as a new guy goes.
Okay,
I think he's probably been by far the best of the new hires on the offensive side of the ball. Now, Cadillac, I mean, he's in a class of his own. That room is stocked to the gills with talent, and he represents what Auburn is. That's my childhood hero. I got a picture back up behind me somewhere of Cadillac, so you're not going to give me anything to say anything bad about Cadillac from me.
What about an assistant that's been not so good?
I mean, I don't see how you can give a passing grade or maybe not a passing grade, but you haven't seen anything positive out of Marcus Davis's group, which may not be his fault. I think we've got very poor receiver talent across the board, and I think we missed on the transfer guys we brought in, besides maybe Burton, but he's more future piece than he is now. He obviously hadn't gotten on the field.
Yeah, there's a lot of school of thought that like the receiver coach is more of just a glorified recruiter rather than a actual, in quotes, coach. You buy into that?
Not wholeheartedly. I do think the receiver position is extremely easier to coach than the offensive line or the defensive line or the quarterback position is. So I do think traditionally you see better recruiters at those spots as opposed to real X's and O's coaches, because you can kind of get away with that and you can stock your elite recruiters there. So I don't know if Marcus Davis is an elite recruiter or not. He's only been here 5-6 months. I mean, we've got great receiver commits, so it seems like it's going well there, but the production definitely is not out of there in that position. I'm not sure that's his fault. I think it's probably more of a function of our talent at that position being one of the worst I've ever seen it.
Taking Perry Thompson out of it, who's your second most hyped receiver recruit for 2024?
Bryce Kane is a stud, and he's going to be a stud in the slot position, I think, at Auburn.
So you think these guys are going to be some instant impact as true freshmen?
I think Kane and Thompson will be. Maybe not. I mean, Kane's got to put a little bit of weight on, I think. But at that slot position, you're playing behind Fair, too, who I think – Jay Fair is by far our most promising young receiver we have right now, so he's probably not going to get on the field too much in front of him. But we may not be done in 2024 for the receiver position either. If you believe the rumors, which I won't get into too much here, I don't want to spoil anything if it's supposed to stay off the podcast waves, but it sounds like we may not be done there with some high-profile players.
Well, can't have enough it's like funny you say you can't have enough depth at that position. Then you look at this year, which on paper, if you're looking at it on paper, should have been one of the deepest wide receiver rooms Auburn's had. Just looking at the transfers, the class, the experience, the production of guys that have come in, the guys that were returning, and just, yeah, I don't think that goes without saying it ain't happening. We ain't seeing it.
You say that. Who do you think, obviously Hooks and Shorter should be performing way above because we brought them in as one-year transfers. Who else in that receiver room were you counting on to be a stud this year? I'm with you on Jay Fair and Camden Brown, but who else in that room were you like, okay, well, this guy's going to be a monster?
So stud, I'm not even just saying stud. I'm just saying serviceable. A guy that has come in and played football at this level and just caught some balls. And that would even be going back to Nick Mardner. That would be going. It didn't have to be good. Just somebody who had played the game, who had the potential to at least go out there. I mean, the bar is very low for what I'm saying here. Literally just catch a ball. I don't know if he has a catch on the season yet.
I don't think he does, but I wouldn't expect much out of that guy. I mean, he had a decent year in Hawaii, and then he goes to Cincinnati where he's supposed to start at Cincinnati, and he put up like 200 yards for the year.
Yeah, I mean, it was just some depth pieces. Well, it's 200 more he's on pace for at Auburn. So I would be thrilled if Nick Mardner would get 200 yards at Auburn at this point.
Yeah, but he's doing that against SEC cornerbacks as opposed to American Conference cornerbacks he was going up against last year.
He could have done it against Sanford or UMass, New Mexico State. I'm just saying.
Well, he had receivers putting up yards against those teams. He's just been behind them.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, feed the deal. Now, Javaris Johnson, obviously, he's been hurt. There's been some injuries in that room.
Javaris is a good player, too. I forgot about him.
Coy Moore, and we've obviously had a lot of disagreements on what Coy Moore's situation is. And obviously, he's been banged up. But he just hasn't been a factor thus far in the few times he has been played or targeted. I've seen
nothing out of Coy Moore on the field to get me excited about that guy.
I mean, he's got to be in single-digit catches. And then, I say Johnson. Obviously, Johnson's been hurt. And then you brought in Hooks and Shorter. And then, yeah, some other guys. Was it Burton? That were just going to be sort of future plays at the position. And who – am I forgetting anybody that was true – who were true freshmen that were high school recruits that were receivers? Who am I forgetting there?
I don't know if we brought in – I don't think we brought in a true freshman high schooler this year. But, I mean, the year before that, we had three guys we all liked, and Camden Brown, Jay Farron, and Amari Kelly. So I think it was one of those things where it wasn't a priority.
Yeah. If that ages well, how funny will that be if Harsin has one of the better receiving classes? That'll be a storyline. Who was the guy that was committed to Auburn for a minute, receiver, last year? About this time last year, decommitted, went to Penn State, I think.
The kid from Central Phoenix City who we are cursed with was Carmelo English.
Yes.
He went to Michigan.
Was it Michigan? It's somewhere, yeah, Big Ten, same thing. Penn State, Michigan, it's all up north. Yeah, and that's, yeah, I forgot the Central Phoenix City thing. And I kind of wonder too if part of the element of Central Phoenix City, which has just been a ripe recruiting ground for talent, is just I feel like, and you know a far amount more recruiting than me, so I'm just going to kind of toss this opinion out there, let you run with it. But I feel like with recruiting and these younger guys, that there is this kind of wanderlust to get away from home a little bit, and with Central Phoenix City being so close to Auburn, literally like 30-ish minutes away, that those guys kind of have the desire to just go somewhere else instead of being the hometown hero. And obviously that can be other places aside from just that as well. Cause I feel like in the older days, it was a lot of, and I say older days, I mean, it could just be 20 years ago. There was a lot more kind of like hometown pride to play for the hometown team, keep it local, keep it in state. But I feel like as football as a whole, college football is an industry has grown so much. I feel like the stage is bigger and these kids want to kind of fly further away. That was kind of a long-winded setup there, but what are your thoughts on that?
I think that has something to do with it. I think that pipelines, when it comes to high school recruiting, is a real thing. You can go all the way back to when Pat Dye was a coach at Auburn, and we got five Dillard players from the Miami area. I don't know how we – I was – if I was alive at that point, I may have been 1 or 2 years old, so – I can't speak too much on it besides knowing that it happened. And ever since then, up until the Tuberville's days, we were landing players from Dillard left and right. So I think some players, I think that pipeline affects a real deal. And I think out of Central Phoenix City, you got a pipeline open to Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia, it seems like.
Is there a guy that may have burned the pipeline?
I'd have to go back and think. I mean, when was the first Central Phoenix City player I can remember off the top of my head would have been somebody like it was before Justin Ross, but I remember he was a big one. That was we were in it till the end. He went to Clemson.
You overthought that when I was trying to set you up for like a Harsin tee off there. And
no, this is a Gus problem too, man. This is way before. Go back to my Gus save. Gus had the same problem with Central Phoenix City. So
you really overthought. I was trying to give a little easy lob there. You overthought that one to oblivion. But yeah, you know, for the sake for the listeners, I mean, that's good. It's definitely good content there. Now, jumping a little bit back to subject-wise of kind of how Auburn has done thus far midway through the season and kind of the trajectory of it, how have you felt defensively about things?
Defense is way better than I thought they were going to be. Now, it hasn't been perfect. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I'm agreeing. I'm like, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we definitely, in August, we're talking like, this front seven, this D-line's going to struggle. I'm still – you got a different vantage point than me with how has Justin Rogers looked?
Way better than they were talking about in preseason. And this is, okay. I can't remember if I was talking with you or somebody else during the game last week. Justin Rogers was holding his own pretty well against Georgia, and he was causing some problems for the run game. I think he's honestly been better than Jason Jones at that nose tackle spot this year. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him get the starting job or at least the more amount of playing time there in the future.
Yeah, and I will say the defensive line has done well, just kind of holding up, not giving up a ton of the run, which I think we thought was going to happen. Pass rush it's been fine. I think as far as McLeod goes and the transfers, like you got as much out of them as you realistically could have expected. And it hadn't been great, but it hasn't been horrendous. I think it's been good enough. Linebacker position, I would say that's probably the biggest surprise. Is that a hot take?
Yeah, so here's my thing with the linebacker position. I think Nixon is a solid player with physical limitations. I think he knows where he's supposed to be, but he can't always get there because he doesn't have the physical ability to make the play. Now, Asante is a physical freak.
Yeah.
But he is way better attacking the line of scrimmage than he is sitting back, diagnosing the play, and playing traditional off-ball linebacker.
Yeah, I'm sorry to do this to you, to give you a little pain point, but, like, you got to give Harsin props. That was a good – didn't pan out for Harsin, but it was a good evaluation in hindsight. They obviously saw something in him that, obviously, with the family situation, and it was his father, I think, that passed away last year.
I think that's what I remember him saying in an interview.
Yeah, so – and I think we can very safely say that given that type of situation with anybody, especially a college student, like, no one – what should be expecting any type of realistic turnaround given the severity of that type situation. So I don't think anybody's judging him for needing to really step away from football just to deal with his own personal and family matters. But I think happy for everybody now that he is in, I'm going to presumably say probably just a better place altogether. And it's
seems like
really
he's
starting. Yeah. Yeah. It's starting to show on the
field. Wouldn't you be way happier if your coach was Hugh Freeze as opposed to Brian Harsin the year before?
Well, I was going more so of just like, you know, the healing of healing from, you know, a major family death. But yeah, I'm sure the coaching factor was another big thing too for him. But it's definitely the light switch has gone off for him, which, I mean, that was probably the biggest position in need. Another person I want to ask about. And just to kind of clarify for anybody listening, I'm doing a lot of photography at these games. I'm okay-ish behind a camera, so I try to get out there and capture some moments. So I don't always get the best vantage point of the game. So when I'm saying this stuff, this isn't just like rhetorical to give Pat like something to talk about. This is generally me like I have a horrible view because I'm looking at the game through a 1-inch lens trying to get like a really cool shot of somebody doing something cool. So just letting you guys know, this is not some type of bit. But tell me about DJ James. I've heard that he's kind of not been as great, maybe, as we had expected.
He's been fine. I don't think it's been a situation where he's
but step forward. But maybe he hadn't taken like the step forward I think people thought he would make. Is that better?
Yeah, wording? I mean, it's one of those things where I haven't noticed him get toasted either. I mean, I'm sure he has once or twice. I'm just not remembering it. But I think he's playing fine. He's probably not playing up to that first team All SEC cornerback a lot of people thought he was going to play. But yeah. I think he's been a fine cornerback for us this year.
Need Keyonte Scott back. Miss him.
Stud. He's our best nickelback since maybe Rudy Ford. I think Keyonte Scott's a stud at nickel.
Yeah, I mean he put out a very cryptic tweet that just said soon. So yeah.
Don't tease me, Brett.
Yeah, hopefully soon is like Saturday soon. But if not, you know, I won't be greedy. Ole Miss would be great. But yeah, no, he's a machine. Who else is banged up back there currently? I have such a hard time keeping track.
Let's put injuries. A pause on that real quick because I think we may have missed the most impressive player on defense. Well, one of the two most impressive players all year.
Oh, Jalen Harris. No, oh, I'll say Jalen Simpson, but go off.
Marcus Harris is playing the best interior defensive line play I've seen at Auburn since Derrick Brown. In that Georgia game, he was a one-man wrecking crew. And he has turned into a complete total stud on the D-line.
So that's what I've always said, like, before every season. I said there's always going to be that one guy who kind of lets you down, and there's always going to be that one guy that comes out of nowhere that nobody was talking about. I think that's pretty safe to say that happens almost every season. It's just kind of a crapshoot of who's it going to be. Would you say that Marcus Harris is maybe that guy on defense?
I don't know. I was expecting him to be a good player. I thought he was probably a fringe third-team, second-team All-SEC player. But if he's – maybe I'm just not watching enough other teams right now, but the way he plays looks like a first-team all-SEC defense tackle to me. I mean, he is disrupting everything up there. Yeah. He
keeps it up. All right, well, let's go to my guy, Jalen Simpson.
Another stud. Here's another hot take. Best safety at Auburn since Junior Rosiering.
Jalen?
Maybe. Who you got over him?
So let me ask this. Was he playing corner last year? Is that right?
The first half. They moved him to safety. It's kind of like Rudy Ford. I don't know how much you remember about Rudy, but they kind of had him playing out of position at safety for most of his career, and they moved him up to that nickel when he shined and he thrived, especially in 2016. He was a monster up there.
So we could blame that kind of another Harsin L right there.
Now, Rudy was a Gus. Are you talking about?
No, Jalen? I was talking about Jalen playing out of position.
Right. Well, I mean, they ended up moving him. I think they moved him prior to – I can't remember. I kind of toned out a lot of last year, to be honest with you.
Because that was always the take on him. I remember a lot of people saying, oh, he's playing out of position. He's a lot better at safety. And I think him kind of getting back there is just really – because I remember him in 21. I'm like, man, you know, he's out there –
20, man, that Kentucky game, that first game in 2020 against Kentucky, he looked really good.
Yeah, I remember he was kind of banging skulls. You'd see him zipping around back there, you know, Smoke Monday, get a targeting call. And it was just like, just a fun secondary to watch. And then I was like, oh, man, I was really hyping him up preseason. Like, I think Jalen Simpson's going to be that guy. Once again, Harsin, really hard for anybody to be the guy with what Harsin was putting out there. And I was kind of sad about it. Like, man, you know, Jalen just it's not there for what I was hoping it would be. And that was just bugging optimism, whatever you want to call it. But I think this year we're starting to see what I thought we would see last year. I mean, better late than never, don't get me wrong. But yeah, he's playing absolutely on fire. So it's good. It's awesome to see some guys stepping up. And I think we kind of recapped it well. The defense is, I would say, they're out kicking their coverage. They're playing probably above or maxing out where their talent or expectation should be, which is awesome. Yeah. I mean, there's really hadn't been any complaint. Now we'll see how, well, you know, we say that now going against probably the biggest high octane offense they're going to face all season, if not one of the top two.
And well, they're playing two in a row. This is going to be the big test.
Yeah. And then I hate to say it, like the way Milroe's trending as of right now, that who knows, they might start clicking when it comes to Bama. So it's going to be they're going to get their test against LSU and Ole Miss, especially Daniels. I was on a show with a LSU personality, and she said kind of like, hey, what would it take for Auburn to win this game? And she was just like, Daniels and Nussmeier would have to get kidnapped and catch the flu.
Who said that?
It was a Daily Joy who does LSU content and coverage. She's worked recruiting.
She doesn't think much of our defense, does she?
I don't know if it's the defense or she's just very, very high in their offense or just understands that Baton Rouge at night has just been Auburn's kryptonite. Could be a combination of all of the above.
I'm not ready I'm not ready to concede a beatdown. Initially, LSU was my pick to win the West this year. I was very high on them.
I think their
offense is incredible, but our defense is matching up with everybody we've played so far. And as we were just talking about before the show, it looks like they're getting run all over this year.
But what's kind of scary, though. Can do. Yeah, but what's scary is Auburn hadn't really played a dual threat quarterback so far.
True. I mean, we haven't seen. Maybe that'll be different.
Yeah, and that's going to have to be. We'll have to see how. I mean, really, that's where you get to look at. That's where you get to look at Asante and be like, bro, you can go out there and do your thing.
We have played a dual threat quarterback.
Which one?
Sam Jackson, the Cal's backup. We kind of shut him down.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot about that. But you back up.
Well, hey, Jaden Daniels is way better, obviously. But.
Yeah. Let's not give Cal too much credit. Okay, so we're going over the off. I'm going to say the best player on Auburn's team right now, Oscar Chapman. Is that a hot take?
He's a stud.
The A&M punt that he saved. I mean, he's just straight up. What am I trying to say? Drone striking the ball. There we go. Or what's the missile? It's not a drone missile. Not a predator missile. What do you call those missiles?
It's like scuds.
Something like that. Yeah. Anyway, cool missile term. Or just dropping. I mean, it's like he's dropping these punts with GPS, like
save
millimeter
this for
precision.
Day, man. We can't do this till the B-52 bombers are crossing the stadium.
Yeah, yeah. But he's nailing, just dropping it right in the side, the 5-yard line. Just sending bombs out there, and that's been refreshing because Auburn always hadn't, you don't appreciate it. Now. Just want to see him. I want to see a safety. Okay, I'm just gonna say it. I want Chapman to pin him deep within the two, and then I want McLeod. Anybody, it can be anybody on defense. I won't play favorites here. Somebody just get a safety. I want to see it. I want to get those 2 points, and I want to be happy about a safety. So it can be this weekend. I'd prefer it to be this weekend. But really, if it's any weekend, that'd be great.
As long as you get a safety, you don't care what else happens.
Yeah, I do care what else happens, but, like, safety is the topping on the ice cream that you just didn't realize how good it was till you add it. Maybe it's whipped cream, maybe it's sprinkles, but then you're like, it makes something that's awesome just exponentially better. So give me a six, like a sack safety, just a dirty, dirty blind side, just pancake them.
Strip awesome. Sack safety.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that'd be even better, but I'll just take a regular sack. I won't get too greedy with it. And then, of course, McPherson has been killing it. And Quattlebaum is probably my favorite player on the team. I'm a big long snapper.
I thought the TikTok guy was the snapper.
Who's a TikTok guy?
I'm pretty sure somebody beat out Quattlebaum in the preseason to be the long snapper.
It's impossible. Really?
Bro, have you been doing all these Auburn talk shows for the last 5-6 weeks been saying Quattlebaum's snapping when he's not?
I probably talk about Quattlebaum every single episode, and I'm just going to refuse to believe that this is true.
You're an expert.
I see him warming up all the time.
May somebody want to check your facts, bro.
Did somebody really beat out Quattlebaum?
Yeah, the TikTok kid, Hughes, or whatever his name is.
Who's TikTok kid?
Yeah, you may have, well, it'll take time to go find his name, but I am 99.9% sure, and I don't pay attention to the long snapper, but I know for a fact on the opening day roster on the depth chart that the other kid was starting over Quattlebaum.
Well, obviously, I'm not paying enough attention to the depth chart either.
You just blame it on field view, man. You get the sideline pass, you can't be blamed for that.
Yeah, well, you see, the way you're right, because the way the long snapper's positioned, like, there's no way I can see that number or name from where I'm at. Everybody in a helmet looks the same. So, like,
how many shows you doing with people that you've been talking about Quattlebaum this whole time?
I'm honestly going to double down and just keep talking about it like he's starting. Until somebody tells me.
Maybe I'm wrong. I hope for your sake I'm wrong, because it's going to be a real tough scene.
until somebody tells me to stop, I'm going to have Quattlebaum. I'm going to pay him an NIL deal. Come on the show, and we're going to just ask him about all the games. I hadn't played in only two games this year. I'm just going to double down.
Changed out of work position. Get him on the field.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Q why he's giving favoritism to guys with TikToks.
Maybe that's what's going on. That could be another feather in your cap right there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it's TikTok fame. I mean, look at Livy Dunn at LSU. Like, I mean, there really is something to be said that maybe TikTok fame is giving – that's the question right there. Are players with TikTok fame getting special treatment?
I honestly thought this was like a bit from you that you kept talking about Quattlebaum the last couple of weeks.
Maybe it is. Maybe I'm a double agent.
You're going to have to cut all of this.
Just do the longest episode. Absolutely not. No, Quattlebaum's staying. We're going to have to do some deep.
Quattlebaum Anon. QAnon.
Yes, QAnon. That's perfect. That works very – that's a great NIL opportunity for him. He could be a spokesman. Oh man, that's gonna get me canceled. May have to edit that out. Well, so anyway, to wrap it all up, what has your thoughts been midway through the season, and what do you think we could be expecting moving forward to close this out?
I'm not happy with the offense, but I think a lot of it has to do with all those new pieces playing together for the first time, and I'm expecting improvement the rest of the year.
Okay, and I'm with you too. My whole thing is I want to see improvement. It doesn't have to be great. The record doesn't matter relatively. It's what is happening, and I kind of made this comparison earlier.
We need to make a bowl game.
We need to win a bowl game.
I don't think that matters so much.
You see, I'm sick of losing them. I mean, Gus just – that was the Gus's thing. He just hated winning bowl games. So just win a bowl game, get some good momentum. Does it matter long-term? No. Is it a moral victory I want? Yeah, because I'm sick of losing – to Minnesota's and Northwestern's and Houston's and just teams like that Auburn really should have no business losing to ever.
Don't get me wrong. I prefer to win the games. Much prefer them. I just don't think it's this big, big cloud following your program the rest of the offseason like some people think it is.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, it's not, but it would just be nice to have the momentum for a change just to come into January and be, oh, this is nice. Feel good. And then, Yeah, I made the comparison earlier to 2009. I'm just saying, like, 2009 record-wise wasn't great, and it definitely had its low points for sure. Actually, LSU 2009 was awful. But you saw a lot of things in 2009 that kind of gave you this feeling of, like, oh, wow, like, all the issues we've had for the last number of years are really starting to change. And I hope that we start to see some of that coming up here pretty soon.
There are some more similarities there, just really quickly.
Yeah.
If you go back and look at Chris Todd's numbers against SEC teams that year, they are not Thorne-level bad, but they are not the numbers that a lot of Auburn fans remember from him.
No, it's 100%. He definitely padded his numbers against some of the cupcakes, and it made people feel good because they weren't barely doing that in 08 or 07. So right. It was just fun to see just electric offense that was clicking at the time. Yeah, true. So I think that's going to make people feel immensely better. If just, you don't even have to win the games, but if the offense is looking, clicking in balance, that will be that. So to recap it, defense far exceeding expectations. We've been very happy with special teams offensively, specifically the passing side of the ball when it comes to tight ends, receivers, quarterbacks, O-line, going to give the O-line love. I think they're doing just fine considering how bad they've been for a while. And plug and plays there have done well. Running backs have been doing everything you'd hope they do too. So that's going to be it. Will we see it this weekend? I don't know if we're going to see it this weekend, but this is a defense that really gives you a good chance to showcase it. And then you got a home game against Ole Miss. But I definitely think the realistic minimum expectation should be steps forward. Does that mean you win both of these games? Maybe, maybe not, probably not, especially LSU. But you can make strides and still gain momentum no matter what the result of the actual game is. So that's what I'm hoping for this weekend. I'm sure you're probably on a similar page. And then kind of like we discussed, we'll see how they end up doing come time the end of the season. And if they can turn some of those problems around, and that shows the difference between coaches who will and won't make it. So big test for Hugh Freeze coming up, and look forward to seeing how he handles the challenge. So that's going to wrap it up for today's episode. Pat, as always, thank you for coming on. We will do it again next week after what will be a very likely eventful LSU game. So have a good night. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show.
Adios.